Good to see each of you here tonight. We, like we lost a few between the lunch and the rain, but we're glad you're here. And I suppose when it does rain, if it was raining here as hard as it was out on Interstate 40 coming toward Mount Juliet, it was real nasty. So it's good to see you here tonight. We're going to begin a series of lessons tonight on the parables of Jesus. Kind of an introduction to the parables tonight, and then we'll go to individual parables of Jesus in an effort to learn more of what Jesus has taught in these parables. Jesus was the master teacher of all time. Nicodemus came to him by night and said, "Rabbi, we know that there are a teacher come from God." And at the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, we've mentioned in our Sunday morning class, that at the close of that sermon, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them with one having authority, as one having authority, and not as the scribes. In John chapter 7, John tells us of some officers that were sent by the Pharisees and chief officers for the express purpose of taking Jesus. He was speaking at a certain place. They were to go there and bring him back to the leaders of the Jews. And they went there, they listened to him, and they returned without him. So the officers and the Pharisees asked, where is he? And their conclusion, I guess they probably forgot to get him, but they said, "Never man spake like this man. Never man spake like this man." Jesus' teaching was unique, and it was unique because of many reasons, but of the originality, its truthfulness, it was authoritative, and it was simple. There was not mentioned concerning the model prayer. If you look at that model prayer in Matthew chapter 6, you don't see any 4, 5, 6, 7 syllable words. You don't have to have a dictionary for the most part in looking up to see what Jesus means when he is teaching. He used a variety of techniques in his teaching, of methods in teaching. He presented the truth that were designed for the salvation of the lost, and he did it in different ways. The Sermon on the Mount, for instance, of course, is a lecture type lesson or a formal sermon. And he, at times, answered questions by asking his own question. And there were different other methods, but let's look at Matthew 21 for an example of that. Matthew 21, beginning with verse 23. A lot of the times, those who asked the question were not trying to get an answer. They were trying to stump Jesus. And so sometimes he showed them that he really was the Son of God, that he could tell what they were up to. When he was coming to the temple, the chief priests and elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority?" He had driven out the money changers from the temple. So they want to know, what is your authority and who gave it to you? And Jesus answered and said to them, "I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I in likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things." This was his question. "The baptism of John, whence was it? Was it from heaven or was it from men?" And they reasoned with themselves, saying, "If we shall say from heaven, he will say unto us, why did ye not believe it?" Or believe him. "But if we shall say of men, we fear the people, for they hold John as a prophet." So they were kind of caught between the rock and hard place. Verse 27. And they answered Jesus and said, "We cannot tell." Well, they could, but they didn't want to. And he said to them, "Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things." They had to back off. There were other occasions when he did answer them. But on this occasion, he felt that this particular question, because he knew the hearts of men, that this question did not deserve an answer. And that they needed to think about some things that were going on with John the Baptist and with him that were really from God and were supposed to be causing them to think, and they were not willing to think and then to believe what they were being taught. One of the Lord's favorite methods of teaching was by the use of the parable. Let's look at Matthew chapter 13. There are a number of parables. If you read chapter 13, you just go from one right into another. But just the use of the word parable and how he used it many, many different times is suggested in a few verses. And I want to look at those verses first. Look at chapter 13, verse 3. "And he spake many things unto them in parables, saying," and then it's the start of one of them, "Behold, the sower went forth to sow." Look at chapter 13, verse 13. "Therefore speak I unto them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." We'll discuss that a little bit more. Look at verse 34. Matthew 13, verse 34. "And all these things spake Jesus unto the multitudes in parables, and without a parable spake he not unto them." He was speaking with parables quite a bit when he was teaching the people. I'm told, I did check it out, but that the parables make up more than one third of the teaching of Jesus. You know, and it's hard for us to see that as we go through, for instance, the book of John or the book of Matthew or the book of Mark. But we'll look again later at really in what two books they're found the most. The parables made up more than one third of the recorded teachings. So I think it's beneficial to us, number one, to know what is a parable. How are we to look at a parable as far as its teaching? How is it different from the question asking a question or answering a question by asking a question? How is it different from the Sermon on the Mount? How are we to approach a study of the parables in a way that would be different from a study of the Sermon on the Mount or some other way that Jesus taught? Why did Jesus use parables in his teachings? Let's look at verses again in chapter 13 of Matthew. Look at verses 10 through 17. Verses 10 through 17. This is right after Jesus had spoken the parable of the sower. Some say the parable of the soils. Verse 10, "And disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? He answered and said unto them, Because it's given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given." So that's kind of a mystery. We'll touch base on that a little bit, and then later we'll go into it more. "For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away, even that he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, By hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see and shall not perceive. For the people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes have they closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear, and have not heard them." Basically, he said about this hearing and their eyes, these people were just closing their ears to what Jesus had to say. They were closing their eyes to things that were plain as day right before them. They were refusing to listen. It's almost as if their hearts had been hardened. But they were not willing to listen, and so they were not really good subjects to be taught at this particular point. So Jesus used parables. Parables that would be understood by the apostles because of other teaching that had been done with them. But also parables which, as far as many of the people would be concerned, the truth would be concealed because they would not diligently look into what Jesus was saying to try to understand. They were scoffers. They were not going to pay any attention to what he said anyway. Some other reasons. Psalm 78 verse 2 prophesied concerning the use of parables, and so thus the teaching by the way of parables was a fulfillment of prophecy. Also, it's helpful in remembering something to have a story. People like what is like. If someone tells you a story, and it ties to something that you know or something that you see out there. You see it going to work or you see out here in this field if you're a farmer or whatever. That helps to remember things. How many people today that probably don't even believe in God know about the parable of the Good Samaritan? People call him, well, he's a Good Samaritan and don't even believe in God. But they know what that means. Or he's a prodigal son. I mean, he's no longer in his daddy's home. He just left. Maybe they don't know much about the lesson of the prodigal son from Luke. But they have heard it years and years. And if they go back and read the Bible, and for others who have read the Bible, just the mention of the Good Samaritan, we know that there's a lesson of compassion. The parable of the prodigal son, that there's a lesson that the father will receive those back who have gone astray. His hands are open to them. His arms are open to them. What is a parable? Well, it's hard to define exactly what it is, but we can give a definition that we see in a book. So, it means a throwing alongside of. It's composed of two different Greek words that one of them is throwing the other alongside. I've always thought of a parable as an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And I think that's probably what you've heard from preachers or teachers. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Someone looks out, Jesus looked out in the field, for instance, here in Matthew 13. He sees someone, maybe not that particular time, someone is sowing seed in a field. And in a field, if I remember back home, we had a fence around the fields. They probably didn't have fences then, but we had a fence around the field to keep the cattle out, to keep the horses, the mules out of the garden. Well, along the side of that fence, on the inside, we would be walking there lots, or maybe down a particular road. And seed wouldn't grow very good in that if you keep walking on it. It just was kind of like what he called the wayside soil. There would be places where thorns would come up or where all kind of weeds would come up. That would be a different place. And there would be places, if you're in Wilson County, you're going to find a lot like this, where there's rock just underneath the dirt, where there's a thin layer of topsoil. And then there's rock underneath. Well, you know what the sun's going to do to any seeds that's planted on top of that rock. So Jesus saw something, and then he wanted the lesson to be taught, and so he used something that the people were familiar with in order to teach a spiritual lesson. Take folks where they are and take them to where you want them to be. And that was one of his methods of teaching. In W.E. Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words, the definition there is that a parable denotes a placing beside. It is to throw or lay beside, to compare. It signifies a placing of one thing beside another with a view of comparison. So you've got a story here of a parable of the sower, and he's going out to sow seed. In this particular parable, Jesus here in Matthew 13 explains that parable. So there are a number of purposes that parable serves. And we go to see Jesus' explanation of it to get the meaning. Normally, Jesus does not explain his parables. And normally they have one main lesson. Let's look at some examples of some parables here in the 13th chapter of Matthew. Of course, in verses 1 through 23, there's a parable of the sower. We just went into that a little bit. We'll one night of our series, we'll go into the parable of the sower. But if we look at Matthew 13, beginning with verse 24. Matthew 13, 24. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man which sowed good seed in a field. Well, he says he's going to teach the same thing, no? But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares, or false wheat, false seed. I think the Greek on that is darnel, D-A-R-N-E-L. And he went his way. And when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares. And the servants of the householder came and said to him, sir, didst not thou sow good seed in the field? From whence then hath it tares? These other things that have come up. He said unto them, an enemy has done this. The servant said unto them, wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? He said, nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat from them. Let both grow together to harvest, and in the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them. But gather the wheat into my barn. And we'll go into the meaning of that when we get into a discussion of that particular parable. But we see here that Jesus uses a parable that has to do with sowing good seed, and then there comes up seed or plants that look like the wheat that was planted. I guess the best thing I can compare that with, and if you grew up on a farm, which I did, I'd have to go out and Daddy'd plant all kind of corn. I don't know why. We had enough corn to feed everybody in the neighborhood, plus our hogs. But if you recall, you go out, plant corn, and it comes up. Well, there's something else that a lot of times will come up in cornfields, and that's called Johnson grass. And when it's small, it looks alike, doesn't it? I mean, if you start pulling on it, the corn's easy to pull up. The Johnson grass, it has to be chopped. But that's something that's somewhat like this parable of the tares, but we'll go into that more. Look at verses 31 and 32. Just trying to get an overview. You may say, well, keep going and explain. Well, I haven't looked into it deeply. We're going to look into it deeply later. Verse 31, 32, another parable. Another parable put he forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed. They knew what a grain of mustard seed was. We may not know what a grain of mustard seed is, but a man took it, he sowed it in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds. So it's a small seed, but when it's grown, it's the greatest among herbs and becomes a tree. Most times we don't plant anything, the garden becomes a tree. Unless we're planting a tree. So that the birds of the air come and lodge in the blank branches thereof. So again, Jesus used something that people are familiar with. They're familiar with this small seed that's planted, and they're familiar with as time goes on and as it's cultivated and as rain falls and ultimately it grows into something large. And he gets a lesson from that. He gives them a lesson. Look at verse 44 of chapter 13. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and the joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath and buys that field. A story about a hidden treasure. I've mentioned to some that I read these Lulamoo Western books, and a lot of times in there they talk about these treasures that are buried somewhere out west, you know, by this or that, this train that came up from Mexico that the Indians killed, you know, all the people. But a hidden treasure. What have you heard about a hidden treasure that perked your interest? A hidden treasure. And so Jesus, again, talks to them about something which they're familiar. Look at verse 45. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, he went and sold all that he had and he bought it. They were familiar with this. They were familiar with the various merchants that sold pearls, that sold other things. And they were familiar with the fact of one was found of great value that it would be great to own that particular pearl. Then look at verses 47 through 50. Again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a net. Here we're talking about fish, fishermen. Some of Jesus' apostles were chosen from this trade. So a lot of people fished back there. Not only probably to have their own fish, but many did that for a living. So again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind. So, you know, you couldn't say, okay, we're just going to throw that net out there and this one kind of fish, we're just going to get catfish. Verse 48, when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world, when the angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And then that's the completion of most of the parables here in this particular chapter. Another reason, I guess we could add to the reasons to why parables are studied and look at what parables are, is sometimes there's a short saying or a proverb, and we have to watch that. And Luke, let's look at Luke 5 and verse 36. Luke chapter 5, verse 36. Now, this is very short, but we know it's a parable because Luke says it's a parable. He spake unto them a parable. No man puts a piece of new garment upon an old. If otherwise, then both the new maketh a rent or tear, and the piece that was taken out of the new agrees not with the old. Then he has another parable in the very next verse, in verse 37, of the new wine and old wineskins, verse 37 and 38. No man puts new wine into old bottles, else the new wine will burst the bottles and he's spilled, and the bottles shall perish. But new wine must be put into new bottles, and both are preserved. Just giving us examples of some parables that Jesus used in his teaching, and in the individual classes in the weeks ahead, we'll look at individual parables and the lessons that come from them. What are some things that we need to know in order to interpret, get the meaning of a parable? Number one, if Jesus interprets it and tells us what it means, that resolves it right there. We'll go no farther. But one writer said that there are two dangers that need to be avoided. Number one, ignoring the important features or the important parts of a parable, and thus failing to understand what it means. Number two, trying to make all the details of a parable mean something. Unless Jesus explains it for us, or the writer explains it for us, we need to keep away from that type of interpretation. In a booklet entitled The Parables of Jesus, Neil Lightfoot, the writer, suggests that it's impossible to lay down strict rules, but he does suggest some. He said the amount of comparison within a parable varies from parable to parable. For instance, a while ago we read the parable, part of the parable of the sower. And the wayside soil has a meaning because Jesus explains it. The birds, there's a meaning for the birds. There's a meaning of the word seed. Each type of the four types of soil has a meaning. And Jesus tells us what that meaning is. But so the birds, the fowls, refer to the wicked one. The sun has reference to tribulation, to trials and persecutions. But Jesus explained it. So we have to keep in mind that the reason we can understand a number of teachings within a one parable is that Jesus explained it. But if we look at Luke chapter 15, I know I'm moving hurriedly, but Luke chapter 15, verse 11. This, of course, this chapter has this is the third parable within this chapter of Luke. Luke 15, beginning with verse 11, we have the parable of the prodigal son. Before that, we had the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep. So we have a son who asked his father to divide his inheritance between him and his older brother. And so then he goes out and he wastes it. He throws it away. Finds himself in a destitute situation, and he hires himself out to a man where he's taking care of pigs, swine. And then it says, when he came to himself, he just remembered that back in where his father, where his daddy was, and that older brother, that even the servants were living better than him. And so he said, you know, I'll go back to my father and I'll say, you know, I'll be one of your hired hands. And we have the story there of him going toward the father coming toward him and welcoming. Say, it's told him that he would, you know, going to put a ring on his finger, put a robe on him, put shoes on his feet, kill the fatted calf. What does the fatted calf mean? We don't know. I don't know. There may be somebody, look at a commentary, you might find somebody make a stab at it, but it doesn't really mean anything. It's there to embellish the story. What about the pigs, the swine? I'm sure somebody has stretched it and made that to come out to be something, but it doesn't say. There's no clear teaching that these represent. And one of the other things that I think this particular man pointed out in his book, that we need to be careful that we do not stretch a parable, but that we seek what the central truth is there. What is the central truth? What is the main thing that's being taught in this particular parable? And then everything else around it is the context and has to be interpreted in light of the main purpose. In other words, if Jesus is trying to teach that God the Father welcomes home the prodigal, well, then everything else within that parable has to be understood in light of that main teaching. Also, one thing that was said by one writer, and I think it made good sense, is that we should not get our basic teaching from a parable or any other figurative way of speaking when there is clear teaching elsewhere in the Bible on that subject. Usually you go from the clear speech of the Bible to the clear understanding of a particular part of the Bible and learning what a truth is and what the Bible says about a particular subject. You don't necessarily go to the book of Revelation, for instance, and say, I see something here and this teaches what God says about salvation or this. You go to a place in the Bible where figurative language is not necessarily used and where clear language sets forth what the teaching is. I probably told you more about that than you wanted to know. I didn't have that written down where I could see it, but so that's in my own words. I had living. What about the number? Okay, if you go to the book of John, which somebody just completed study of parts of that book, John doesn't even use the word parable. John says his particular purpose in writing the book of his book of John is that people might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing they might have eternal life or life through his name. So John uses a word that's similar. In the Revised Standard Version, we find the word figure used, and that's somewhat similar to the word parable. Mark only has a few parables because Mark deals with what Jesus did. The deeds of Jesus rather than the teachings of Jesus. Matthew and Luke is where we find most of the parables. We'll continue our study of the parables next week. And we'll have one of our not next week, but the next time that I speak on a Sunday night. We're grateful for your attendance tonight. I think the weather is a whole lot better out there as we think about our way going home tonight. So we appreciate you being here, and we thoroughly enjoyed the day. We appreciate the luncheon that we had today, that the ladies, for the most part, I guess the ladies, being like I am, they didn't do a whole lot of the cooking. But we appreciate that meal and appreciate the people here at Woodbine for that. Tonight, if there's one here that has studied the Word of God and desires to be a Christian, willing to confess Jesus as the Son of God, repenting of your sins, and to be baptized as they did in Bible times in the first century when the apostles were told to go into all the world and preach the gospel. Those that believed they were to and repented, they were to be baptized into Christ, and then further taught. So if you hear subject to the invitation in that manner, or if you as a Christian desire the prayers of this congregation on your behalf, whatever you need, would you come as we stand, as we sing the song.